Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 17th of February. Hope you all had a very nice holiday weekend, if you did indeed have a holiday weekend. If you did not, well, it's good to be back, and we're here. We welcome you, your input and comments, roundtable@wamc.org. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get started right away. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir.
And good morning to you, Joseph. Want to know what happened to me?
Hold on, 1 second. Hey, Alan, what happened to you?
I sneezed so hard that I either...
I sneezed so hard that I either busted
a rib or disconnected something.
Wow.
All right. Mm. So when did that occur?
2 days ago. It's getting better.
All right. So that's a violent sneeze.
It was a hell of a sneeze.
That's why people, after like heart surgery, so they have the pillow, right?
Right.
They hold on to the pillow. You need to have the pillow.
When you cough.
Yeah. When you cough and even sneeze.
Oh, hold on to a pillow.
Yeah.
Now you tell me.
We have to walk around with the pillow.
They give you a pillow. They give you a heart-shaped pillow
after
heart surgery so you can hold on.
And now you tell me?
I didn't know you were in that condition. Rosemary Armeo is with us. She is the SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, and it's a pleasure to have Rosemary back, as always. Thank you.
Do you know what happened to me this morning?
What did you have?
I got a phone call at 6:43.
No.
That is obscene.
From a guy with a heavy Indian accent telling me to get to my computer immediately, my home computer.
No.
Because there was a virus coming. A light came on at Microsoft alerting them to this, and they wanted to help me fix it.
That's not nice.
Oh, my goodness. Does anybody fall for that stuff?
Yes.
No, but the king...
Yes, they do,
must.
Because why else would they be doing it?
The king of Ethiopia has a fortune that you...
And then help that poor Bangladeshi family that is stranded. And
oh, my goodness. 6:43, though. I mean,
yeah,
if you're going to get
much.
Scammed,
that's 3 hours after I'm
stinks.
Up. No, maybe four.
Still early. Early's early. And Mike Spain.
Good morning.
What do you got going on?
What happened to you?
Well, it's cold out there, folks.
But it's warm. It's above zero, and that's pretty nice.
That's why I love Mike. What's wrong, Mike? It's chilly. Well, good morning and welcome. It's very nice to have you all here. Thank you. And let's begin with the news of the day. We got a lot to talk about, so we'll get right to the stories. And I guess we'll begin with Egypt and ISIS and the situation that is going on there, of course. Many headlines around the globe, and it is it's distressing. Egypt conducted an airstrike against an Islamic stronghold in Libya on Monday in retaliation for the beheading of at least a dozen Egyptian Christians by a local franchise of the Islamic State in Cairo's deepest reach yet into the chaos that has engulfed its neighbor. So what do we make of this and ultimately the president's call for more to be done?
Regional order is breaking down in the Middle East. I made a list this morning of all the countries right now that are in trouble, and it's Syria and Iraq, of course. It's
this
Yemen.
This is what happens when you get up at 6:42.
Right.
When the con
man got me up. And Yemen and Libya, and we're social order and a political order is breaking down in this region. We're on the brink of war. And we can sit here and we will, I'm sure, talk about whether this is justified or not and how can we sit back and do nothing. But I just have this horrible feeling that war and diplomacy are tools that are not working in this situation. We have a limited toolbox.
And we caused it. And we read this morning that that Obama, the president, is commissioning an office that will try to answer the rhetoric of the Islamic State. In other words, trying to figure out why people are falling for it and then do our thing in order to stop it from happening. That leaves me totally flummoxed. I have no idea that IS is so effective that this needs to be done.
Well, it
you're
is
talking
like
about
recruiting.
Lone wolves, right?
Yeah.
You know, people becoming sympathetic. People in the U.S. reading about this on the internet and becoming.
Oh, I don't think it's for us.
Right.
I think it's for the Middle East, which has just been described.
Mm-hmm. Meaning that we are looking for a logical answer to an illogical situation.
Correct.
Well, I don't think it's illogical. I mean, just because we don't get the logic of it and it doesn't appeal
right.
to us.
No, I understand.
ISIS knows what it's doing, and it's scarily effective at it. So what you're talking about is kind of a public diplomacy and propaganda move to counter that, which I think is good. Propaganda has become really interesting lately. It's happening in Ukraine, too, where the Russians are using propaganda to recruit people to their side and to really convince the West that they're not wrong. And we are not in that game anymore, although the Voice of America is changing. They've just hired an ex-president of NBC to go in, and we're getting into this game.
So you said a moment ago that we started this.
We did. Yeah, we have unleashed all the forces that are happening in the Middle East. Invading Iraq
in
2003. That set off the sectarian violence between Sunni and Shia that had been in check under Saddam Hussein.
Brutally in check.
Mm. Yeah. And at Arab Spring, which was brought about in great part by WikiLeaks and by demands for change and by the corruption of the regimes that were there, set off all this hope that we'd end up with democracies, and we haven't. The old forces have tried to reentrench, and extreme Islamist factions have gotten a lot of control, and it's very frightening. I don't know where it ends from here.
Well, now what to do? I mean, the U.S. is debating whether or not to approve President Obama's limited approach to authorize a limited engagement and authorize the powers to wage war, which Congress has the constitutional authority to do, but it's the president, the commander-in-chief, who gets actually to wage it, and it seems to go back and forth. It's like Congress wants to tell him how to do it, but they don't want to authorize him because they don't want to be held accountable when it comes time to run for some other office that they authorize this. And it's really, it's just bizarre, the debate that's going on
in
Congress.
And to me, the debate is bigger than that. So whatever they decide, limited warfare or all-out, what does that get us? More conflict in there? Who takes over? Who is going to put these countries back into order as countries? They're falling apart.
Well, it's pretty clear that whatever happens with the U.S. role, it's going to be inherited by the next president.
Absolutely, yeah.
The other thing is that we talked about polls last week, and we talked about a poll where many people are in favor of taking action. And this morning, and I know... you were rolling your eyes last week.
I am, polls. Before you take a poll, you have to take a test and prove to me you know what you're talking about.
Okay, so with that in mind...
Not really, by the way, but go ahead.
The CNN poll now found that 57% of Americans disapprove of how Obama is handling the threat posed by ISIS, which I believe the last poll, 54% said they approved of the handling of the situation.
So let's ask this question: if Obama did what presidents have done from time immemorial, and said, "Okay, let's all go marching in, give them all guns, let's send the cream of our kids into battle, get the brass bands out, and we'll play them out as they go across," would his numbers improve? Answer: yes, they would. But then it doesn't take long, a la Vietnam and everything else, for everything to collapse. So if you're playing a strategic game, which is to get higher numbers, it's obvious what you do. If you are being a sensible person, which I think Obama is, you try to split the baby. And that is not very easy in this case, because I don't know how you do it.
Well, he benefits from being a, quote, lame duck, unquote.
Absolutely.
He doesn't have to win re-election, and he doesn't have a House of the Congress, you know, a side of Congress that are Democrats that he has to support. He can really pretty much do what he thinks is right and not have to play politics on it. He doesn't need public opinion support.
Which
at the level that he would need.
Well,
no. It's important to have the public understand so that they can back him. I'm not diminishing that value, but he doesn't have to just play the polls the way you just described. That is liberating in this situation.
Well, yes and no. He doesn't want to go down in history as being failed, as being a failed president. Number two, Hillary's coming next. And I'll bet anything you can look for Hillary implicitly to criticize what Obama is doing right now, because she wants to be seen as tough guy, Hillary tough guy, which is what will work for her. And since she's out and not in, she doesn't have the responsibility of doing what he's doing right now.
And she has been in her months since, in the years since, leaving that office, has been not harsh criticism, but somewhat critical.
She's trying to distinguish herself, of course, from Obama, which every Democrat understands is not seen as divisive.
Right.
I don't know. In this situation, I think there's a high chance of failure no matter what you do. And that public opinion is going to spin on how it's spun, how we present to them what's going on. I mean, the flip-flop in the polls that you mentioned, Joe, is proof that people don't really know. They don't have any hard, deeply felt feelings about this. You can spin the public.
Well, and I haven't checked the dates, but it seems to me like it's one that was taken after the latest killing of the young woman who's Kayla.
The American aid worker.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One was taken before, one was taken after. Other than that, I don't really.
Right. So people don't like the outcome, so they blame Obama because they don't like the outcome.
That's right.
Let me just ask you, do you think, Rosemary, that anything the United States does will have that big an impact on what the chaos is over there?
Nope. I don't think this is a U.S. fight now. We started it. We set all of this into motion. But now I don't see there's no way to put the stopper back in the bottle.
I mean, there's not going to be a negotiated armistice with ISIS or anything like that. That's not their tactic. Their tactic is chaos, and it seems to be working.
You know, everybody keeps telling me that ISIS knows what it's doing.
I believe that.
Okay. I'm glad you do, because maybe you can explain to me what it is that they know that they're doing.
Well, they're breaking down the state system in the Middle East, because their plan is to put together a caliphate, a new organization that would be headed by them. And those states are not strong there, and we're seeing that. They're calling a lot of people to their side. They're also aggravating the shift that is, the gap that has existed in the region for a long time, for centuries, and that it was plastered over by the state system, and that's the split between Shia and Sunni.
So you think that the citizens of the Middle East, you know, who live in these countries, like the prospect of they don't do what they're told, they're going to get their throats cut?
No, I don't think they like that, but I think that they've lived in an area for a long time. What they want to do is feed their kids and let them grow up and have a fairly decent life. And yes, you do that by going along with what system is there. You obey.
People want order.
Yeah.
And that's why they accepted the Taliban in Afghanistan, not because they embraced the Taliban so much as that they were just tired of the war, you know, 30 years of war that was going on there.
And look at what the U.S. taught them. Oh, we'll get rid of Saddam Hussein. Things will be much better. Ha ha! It didn't happen.
I knew was going to happen.
I think they have just, people have learned there that you have your personal life, and then there's politics.
Well, you know,
just try to stay as far away as possible.
Corey says, I love Rosemary. She's always honest. Absolutely, we caused this by our intervention, and we continue to agitate it by staying there. What to do? Bring all the troops home. No boots on the ground. No sanctions. No bombing campaigns. No arming rebels. No arming governments. Just come home and let the situation sort itself out. I was in Afghanistan 12 years ago, and it looks like that by the time Obama leaves office, we will have been at war for 16 years. That is un-American. That's from Corey.
So back to the Egypt story. I mean, do we let everyone just to go take care of their own problem, or do we? It seems like we have to work together on this, don't we?
The international community can do one thing, and that they can band together to prevent ISIS from being able to sell oil and sell other natural resources. That's how they're raising their money. And no legitimate country should be allowing that to happen and should be accepting that, no matter how cheap it is and no matter how much they need energy. They should really stand together and boycott that and starve their revenue source.
And Robert says, Alan, however brutal Saddam's maintenance of order was, every time Iraqis are polled, they indicate by large majorities that they prefer that, in other words, Saddam, to their current situation. Bush broke it, and it probably can't be put back together at this point by Obama or anybody else. Bob from Albany.
I think there's something to be said to just getting out, to be supportive of a plan when it's put together by someone other than us. And let us not forget that there is a major Western ally in that region, and that's Israel. Israel has much more at stake than we do to keep order or to restore order as much as it can be there. So why are we trying to lead this whole thing?
I agree. I agree with you, except that I do. You have to ask the question, which is, I assume, out there in the global community, which is, well, if you did indeed, as you say, started this, do you not have a responsibility to clean up your mess?
Well, no. We might have a responsibility, but we don't have the ability.
That's exactly
there
right.
There you go. Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't know that we can just pull out. I don't know that every time 25 Egyptians are shown with knives at their throats, that the American conscience will tolerate our not in some way correcting.
I think what happened with the Egyptians is interesting, and also the Jordanian pilot the week before. Jordan responded with the UAE, and so did Egypt. And that's what we need. We cannot be the policemen of the world. How many times do we have to hear that? And in the Middle East, we're seeing that that other countries are stepping up. Ukraine bothers me. We could do so. That is our argument. That is our fight. And we could actually do something in Ukraine. And we don't want to commit to that. Mm. Why commit to the Middle East?
Let's stop there, and we'll be talking about the Ukraine as well as other issues when we come back. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment online, wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. We'll continue our conversation after this break. Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue. We're all here, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. We'll move on to some other issues in just a moment, but before we do, we have some letters to get to as well.
Yes, we do, and I was doing something else, and you caught me flat-footed. Okay, yes, thank you, Joe. Now, you know, I've been looking for things all morning, and I just found the microphone. Okay, so... George says, pulling out of the Middle East does not solve the problem. It would also not stop the Russians and Chinese from filling the gap. It would make things worse. The Ukraine is not our fight, and our military involvement there will not help, says George. Walker says, Hillary has always been a hawk. Her friendship with John McCain is solid, and she's a Bibi Netanyahu supporter. If you read the various commentary and public statements across her political history, you better believe she works behind the scenes with these guys. Her opportunism is one reason why an awful lot of Democrats, including many women, do not feel good about her becoming the nominee. David says, I just thought that the whole discussion on the Iraq and Syria ignores that many Israelis are Jews that had to flee these Arab countries. Baghdad was home to many Jews in the 1950s. Thanks from David. And is there another one? Jeremy says, Rosemary, I love your work. Had to comment. From my perspective, the U.S. administration's foreign policy has been based on the destabilization of the Middle East for decades. Our leaders lie constantly, divide and conquer. Regarding other countries' use of propaganda, could you kindly explain Operation Mockingbird to the listeners? We've even got news anchors being openly fired for lying. So polls and videos can't convince me of what is really going on in the Middle East. Thanks for a great show.
We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Let's hit as many issues as we can in our remaining half hour. And we begin with Scott Walker in the state of Wisconsin.
I love it.
The governor. Thank you. The governor has come under great fire by releasing a higher education budget, which proposes cuts to the University of Wisconsin system. There have been a series of protests throughout the weekend in Madison and elsewhere, upset over the cuts, The last word from the governor's office is, I believe, said that he was very upset that those cuts were released to the public and said that it was a drafting error.
So they weren't considering them?
He included a call to meet the state's workforce needs, but he hastily backtracked, attributing the proposed changes to a drafting error by aides.
And his son goes to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Now, I can only say this to you, that I'm a bit of an expert on this issue. Why? Because I wrote the classic all-time best book about Wisconsin politics, about the was strengthening the Wisconsin legislature. I did it in the 1960s, and you know, this exact fight was going on then. It was the same fight. The Republican
over higher
governor,
education?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Republican governor says, why don't they just teach one more course? Everything would be better. Kids were, in them days, were seen as 1970s, late 1960s, were seen as a bunch of bearded freaks with long hair who were made fun of by the right-wing Republicans, some of whom went on to be really bad Nixonians. So this is nothing new. It's just been happening forever.
Yeah, it's. I wish the article that we read for this, which is from the New York Times, right, Joe?
Yes.
I wish it had a bit more from the governor himself, because it impugns him that his motive in this is personal. He himself is a college dropout. Ridiculous. He dropped out his senior year, the first semester of his senior year. I would kill him if I were his parents. And also that he just sees the universities as generating a whole bunch of liberal elite, and so he wants to hurt them. I hope that's not true. How foolish.
Well,
you don't make policy
that way. It's also, Rosemary, that he wants to be president. And he sees this as a way...
And why is that good?
Because he sees this as a way of organizing the right-wing elements that traditionally come out in primaries.
Well, I hate the whole strain in American life that we don't like intellectuals. If there's anything states should be spending money at, and this includes New York, it's education from kindergarten through college, and health. And that's why are there cuts at all? Put the money there.
Yeah, he's proposing a $300 million cut to the university system in his proposed budget. And that's just, what would that do in New York?
I mean, my
devastated.
God.
Yeah, which is interesting because the new speaker, Hastie,
yeah,
has now taken on the funding of public education, higher education, as one of his main thrusts.
To add to it or to
add
cut?
To add to it.
Good.
Because clearly the assembly stands for those people who are, in many cases, don't have the resources to go to college. And he wants to make sure that that happens. I'm not hearing that championed by the governor of New York State.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. How does a state lose when you have an educated, healthy population, right?
That's a great rhetorical question. It's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
But the opposite side is the Scott Walker approach, and that is we've got to cut costs. We've got to rein in costs. We've got to stop the unions. We've got to stop this spiraling cost of higher education. That's the rhetoric, and it does seem to get some sympathy from conservatives.
And you know, I love Rosemary because I know she always tells the truth, as these letters are saying. And here she is, a college professor. Joe is adjunct, but Rosemary is not only a college professor, but she's about to become the chair of her
program,
journalism program. So
we share it. We have a great little department, and
yeah,
there's the same pressures on us at SUNY that they must face in Wisconsin to cut costs. And one idea of administrators, everybody teach more courses.
Well, and Rosemary, let me ask you about that. You know, I always taught many more courses than I had to. It was that simple. I like to teach, so I taught more than I was supposed to. So my question to you is, what about that argument? Is that falling on deaf ears that, you know, everybody should take one more course on? What would be the big thing?
It's being pushed by big parts of the administration, and I can understand it. And personally, I could do a course. I volunteer to teach extra courses beyond my normal load. But that's not true for many of my colleagues who do extensive writing and research and new books are coming out and new experiments are being done. And the whole glory and the whole benefit of having a university, a state university system, is that you give people the space and time to do that. So I'm opposed to anything that says everyone will teach the same and here's the number of courses. But right. if they worked with the faculty, I'm pretty sure they could find people who would be willing to do it.
If a professor has to develop the curriculum because they're teaching a cutting-edge kind of course,
right.
that is demanding. I mean, that's extraordinarily demanding. Mm-hmm. It may be less demanding if you're teaching a discipline that's already established, like if you're teaching medieval history or something
right.
like that. You know, so it really needs to be balanced, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. No way.
Well, there are, to answer Rosemary, there are, of course, many, many people who do cutting-edge research, and we can understand.
Right.
But there are also some people who don't. Mm-hmm. In other words, who turn over the yellow pages and start all over again.
Right.
Now, the university...
You get that tenure, and you're set, and it's like you're teaching just a few courses. You're at campus only a few days. Sure, of course it's tempting not to do anything else.
So the university...
But I don't think that's the rule.
No. So I'm just saying there are some. And the University of Wisconsin, of course, has the greatest history department in the nation.
Yes.
Including Harvard. So they really do, I'm just saying, they really have brought great distinction to the state mm-hmm. because of what they've been able to do.
Yeah, the head of Madison, of the Madison branch, was saying that to make the cuts that he wants, she would have to eliminate 5 whole schools, not just a few courses. That's what happened in the economic downturn at SUNY.
Yeah, but in the German department, remember that?
Yeah, foreign languages and theater were cut, and classics have been cut at many universities because we're now educating for jobs rather than for to be smart, which is
Rosemary,
terrifying.
When Angela Merkel was on the other day, if the German department had been allowed to prosper and go forward, a lot
more
of our people
could have understood it.
Yeah.
That
is a really interesting question. It won't be solved. Certainly won't be solved with Scott Walker's approaches. What should colleges be teaching? And I mean, I worked in Africa where there was great effort to get kids into higher education, and it was so good to see them there. And then they would graduate, and to what? There are no jobs for those educated people to work in. But again, I say, what is the downside of having a smart, ambitious population?
Some of them will be calling Americans at 6:36 in the morning.
No, not they were not African.
All right. Let us go to a Times Union story by Casey Seiler, that is outlining the governor's plan to strip the pension from corrupt officials in New York State.
Well, back in 2011, a law was passed as part of, it was called the Public Integrity Reform Act, that in the future, anybody who is convicted of a crime may have his pension halted. But that does not affect current legislators and current state employees who are in the pension system. So in order to make that possible, the state would have to pass a constitutional amendment, because it's guaranteed in the Constitution that really, once you earn a pension, it's yours. And whether you're convicted of a crime even related to your public office, you still get to keep your pension. So the governor is campaigning for an ethics package, and he's making it part of the budget adoption plan. He wants to get the legislature to agree before April 1st, or he's not going to have a budget. He's ready to play hardball here. He's indicated that. And part of it is getting them on board on starting the process. And it's a two-year, it's more than a two-year
process. Constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
And the people who are already in stealing, apparently they're excused.
Actually, there's some elements of his proposal that would make it retroactive.
Right. They could go take it away from the convicts, the rogues gallery that's already serving time.
Right. Let me just say, are you sure that's what he wants? In other words, he set a Moreland Act commission up, and he apparently didn't really want it because he killed it in the middle of just as they were beginning to do some stuff. He said when he was running for political office in the first place that he was not going to allow those guys to draw their own districts and to win. And then he dropped that as soon as he got elected. Then he set up a couple of ethics commissions, which have not exactly distinguished themselves because they didn't have enough basically to work with. I don't want to be a bad guy here. I don't want him hating me. Believe me, I don't. I know him, and I don't want that. But how do we know when he proposes something like this that he really means it?
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters what he ultimately wants in his heart of hearts. It's what we the people want. And it annoys me to see pensions going to people who have robbed the people.
Right.
So I hope it goes through.
No. I think there's a lot of public support for it. I think a lot of people feel just like you do, Rosemary. Why is some state lawmaker who used his public position to enrich himself, then he gets caught, gets convicted, and he still gets his
I'm still fat paying him.
I'm
pension.
So sorry. You're both so naive. I walk into the room and I yell with all my colleagues, "We're damned angry and we're not going to take it anymore because it's a great idea." Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen. What happens is when that governor walks into that room with those two jokers from the Assembly and the Senate and says, "You've got to give me this and I mean it and I'm not moving till you do," even if we have a late budget, then he really means it. And I'll be satisfied when I see that he really means it.
We'll have to see.
And while we see, we'll take a break and we'll be back and perhaps we will see all kinds of new things. We'll be right back after this.
Support comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. And Saratoga Bridges, Boston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more. SaratogaBridges.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. A very nice Tuesday morning, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have a lot of your comments, which we will read to you right now.
Okay, so Mark says, ISIS wants to deceive the world into thinking that they're just a religious movement on the rise, but there's never been a group that has come to power without a leader. For ISIS to have accomplished what they have done, there must be a leader. We need to find him and bring him to justice. And please don't forget that Boko Haram is just as bad.
There is a leader. We created him. He was a rebel when we invaded Iraq. His name is al-Baghdadi. And he would be the leader if ISIS becomes, you know, whatever you call this super state it's trying to create.
I shouldn't do this, but big al-Baghdadi. okay, so... Tony says, a pension is a reduction in current pay in exchange for a promise for the withheld money that will be paid back. That is a bond or promise to repay. The only advantage American law given to pensions and to 401k and the university teaches 403b from Mutual of America or plans from TIA is the tax deferral. Everyone's pension should be protected. Even regular convicts have their pensions protected from creditors under bankruptcy law. If a lawmaker is convicted, he should be fined a fixed sum of money, which, by the way,
which is another way to do it.
Exactly what Preet Bharara is thinking of. You know, they get
must
done.
Take the money out of pensions.
Find them essentially the equivalent of their pension.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, I'd be happy with that, too. Yeah,
that works. No constitutional amendment needed for that.
Yeah.
And Jim says, recently, Governor Walker traveled to London to establish some foreign policy bona fides. In an interview with a British reporter, he was asked if he believed in evolution. His response was, no comment.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's true.
He needs to go to college.
Then we heard a very important from Ultra Girl. That's what it says up there, Ultra Girl. Sneezing. Alan, lift one knee towards your chest to protect your back when sneezing. Pillow protects chest after heart surgery. You send him.
That's hard to do when you're driving. You know, you have to sneeze and you're driving, and your eyes close when you sneeze, too.
You can't not close your eyes.
That's so dangerous.
But by the way, that's true. It's one of the times that if you sneeze, I have read, or my friend, long-departed Steve Pearl, told me that you know, you were totally unconscious the moment you were sneezing.
Mm-hmm. So and you're behind the wheel of a car. It's just frightening.
He also told me that the reason the weather was never right was that they were afraid that they would give it to the Russians who could bomb us. He told me that also. So
So is that a Consider the Source story?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
sounds like
well, I tried to give both sides.
Okay.
And Rick said, why would Rosemary think that the Ukraine is our fight? If it is anyone's fight beyond the Russians and Ukrainians, it would be Germany's. We have no business intervening. Is it time to stop spending our tax dollars to protect Europe when they can well afford it themselves? And Alan, why would you call the weather terrible? Some of us think of snow as fun from the sky. Get out and go snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, sledding, and enjoy the bounty that Mother Nature has granted us this year. And, okay, then I think something just came in.
All right.
No.
Well, you find
don't worry, we're going to read the crazy letters anymore. Wow.
Let's just go on the Ukraine for a minute, because there was something I wanted to talk about as well, because we were talking about the ceasefire last week.
Right.
You were hopeful that it would stick. There's still very much a fragility here. So what do you?
Well, we saw what happened in the interval between agreement on the ceasefire and when it became effective. There was hideous fighting, and control over one road I'm not going to go into the strategy, but basically what happens is you've got thousands of independent Ukrainians, I guess we're calling them now, kind of trapped in this no man's zone of eastern Ukraine. I think it's not a good way to start a ceasefire at all.
No, P-I-A-L.
Yeah, P-I-A-L, Alan.
Right. Putin is a liar.
He's not trustworthy.
So, obviously, it looks a lot dimmer than it did
so
last week.
You are obviously regarding this as a fragile ceasefire, one that probably won't last like the previous one.
Yeah, I think Putin uses ceasefires as he does other diplomatic ploys to get his way. And this gives him a rest. He's gearing up, and I think his course is clear. And he's moved into eastern. He started with Crimea. That was easy. He moved into eastern Ukraine. That was pretty easy.
Well, you said a few minutes ago, that it was U.S. needs to do something in Ukraine where it really can do something.
I think this is a NATO and Russian fight, and NATO is us. So that's why I say it's our fight.
But they're not a member of NATO. And in fact, the Beeb this morning did a terrific story on the future of NATO and the will, because so much of NATO has been dissipated as the so-called peace benefit.
This is a test of that. NATO needs to take a stand. Ukraine is not a member of NATO because we made promises to them that don't join NATO.
That will
annoy the Russians and we'll protect you. Nothing will happen. And now, just like this, we're saying, hey, well, they're not really a member of NATO.
You don't remember the Hungarian Revolution?
Well, I was just a child at the time.
I was a mature man.
We did do the same thing.
We promised.
Yeah.
And what about Cuba? Bay of Pigs. It was disgusting. We shouldn't have done it.
No.
But the fact of the matter is we made promises.
Promises that we shouldn't be making, perhaps.
And that we had no intention of keeping.
Right.
But yeah, I do think there is something the Americans could do if we had the will, which we do not. And that is Americans on the line, troops on the line in eastern Ukraine would have an effect far different than if we tried to send in troops to the Middle East.
Can I just read one letter that I think, as I read the paper this morning, early, 3 o'clock in the morning, occurred to me. And it's the West Virginia oil train explosion and spill.
Yes.
Again, the same Bakken oil trains are running through New York State. Pray a derailment like this does not happen in Albany or Kingston and Newburgh. And this is very relevant to our downtown area, which is housing a lot of these trains. And I guarantee you something like this will happen.
And we'll leave that there for a moment. Let's go to probably our last story this morning, and that was, this happened over the long holiday weekend, but I do want to touch on it, and that was the tragedy in Copenhagen. The targets, eerily familiar, a cartoonist, police officers, and Jews. The suspect had been shot on a Copenhagen street, the profile that emerged was remarkably similar. Habitual criminal who, after serving time in prison, emerged as a motivated killer. So a 22-year-old who was born and raised in Denmark tormented the nation for 12 hours over a murderous weekend that left many in the placid country wondering whether Europe has entered a new normal of upending fear. And the shots were fired, I believe, on Saturday morning outside of a synagogue.
Well, what really got me about this one was the continued insistence by Netanyahu that a Jew cannot be safe in France or any of these other countries, and that it is their obligation, if you're Jewish, to go to Israel to seek protection. I think this is crazy, to be honest with you. And it really has me quite worried. When Roselle and I traveled in the 1960s to Israel, everywhere I went, people said that to me. What are you doing in America? You have no chance in America. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And they would say, well, look at what happened in Germany. That's going to happen everywhere, they're saying. There was a story this morning on the Beeb about a guy who dressed up in a very Jewish outfit, and walked through the bad places in France where Muslims live and who were spit upon. And they took pictures of the whole thing. But I have to say, it is the job of government to protect everybody, and they damn well ought to do it.
Yeah, I was surprised that story got, it seemed to me, not very big or urgent coverage in the United States. I guess part of it was because it was on a weekend.
Holiday weekend,
contrast between Paris and Copenhagen was huge. And it isn't just because it was 2 versus, I guess, 21 in Paris. It's like, are we getting used to this? It's like school shootings. It's like, oh, another one now?
It does raise a question about whether you're going to let what could just be a wacko copycat get more, make more of it than it might be.
Yeah.
And this cartoonist who had convened this conference to discuss the very issue of free speech and the like, he had been targeted by Islamist extremists because he had depicted Muhammad in cartoons in the past. So, I mean, he was an identified sort of target enemy, whatever. And if somebody does that, you got to measure how you respond so that it isn't, it isn't taken out of context. But I'm disturbed by the anti-Semitism that this
very
demonstrates. He went and attacked a bar mitzvah after that and shot and killed a security guard who was outside. So, I mean, it does show a troubling trend.
Was that article said hopefully not the new normal?
What did you say, Joe? I'm sorry.
As the article indicated, hopefully not the new normal. Hmm. We are out of time, but I want to thank everyone who wrote in, and we continue to ask you for your letters and comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Rosemary, Mike, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Thanks, Joe.
Great. The Roundtable continues after this.